Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Cast of Kings, an unofficial podcast covering the HBO original series Game of Thrones. My name is David Chen, and I've never read any of George R.R. Martin's books from A Song of Ice and Fire.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I've read every book in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
And we're here today to discuss Season 2, Episode 4, Garden of Bones. If you're just tuning in for the first time, you should know you can find every one of our episodes at GameofThronesPodcast.com. You can also email us at acastofkings@gmail.com. One programming note, if you're listening, you should know that we follow this show primarily as a television show, meaning that when you're writing in or when you're commenting or whatever, please don't include any spoilers from future developments that you know from the book or whatever. We're primarily talking about this as a TV show, and as such, we'll spoil everything through Season 2, Episode 4, Garden of Bones, but nothing from anything in future weeks, and that includes anything given away in the next time on preview for Game of Thrones. So let's delve into this episode, which I thought was pretty interesting, Joanna, because it started with something horrible being ripped from someone's belly and ended exactly the same way. Boom!
Bookended! What?
Woo! You like it. Seriously, though, what did you think of Garden of Bones?
I had some problems specifically with one scene, but otherwise I thought it was a really good episode. Though I wasn't overjoyed that it started with a fart joke. I thought that was a weird tone to start the episode with. But yeah, I thought it was a good episode.
I thought it was all right. I mean, okay, I tweeted this after I saw the episode, which is that every week, whenever I think Game of Thrones has reached the bottom in terms of the depths of depravity it can descend to, it surprises me it again. And this episode certainly did that. I mean, there was so much horrific stuff going on in this episode, from the disemboweling in the first scene to death by rat eating its way through your torso to, you know, prostitute beating, that it's just, it was a rough hour of television, Joanna. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I've seen stuff, you know, we watch a lot of movies in the work that we do. I've seen some stuff, man. And this was still a difficult hour of TV to watch. That being said, it's all really well done horror. You know, like it's well rendered, it's well shot and stuff. But I think it was I read a recap at Grantland saying, like, this Westeros is not a pleasant place. It never was pleasant, and it continues to get less pleasant as time goes on. So let's start with the opening scene. Right, Robb Stark attacks some of Tywin Lannister's men and wins the battle. And then, you know, he has this guide, like, kind of walking him through the scene and saying, like, yeah, the situation is bleak. You know, you won, but you have a lot of prisoners. We don't have enough food to feed them. He doesn't want to execute them. And then, for some reason, Robb has compassion on this random dude, one of the Lannister's men, and this nurse has to amputate his leg. And this is just so... Was I the only one that thought that was ridiculous, that Robb seemed to be getting attracted to the woman as he was sawing off the guy's leg? Was I the one that, like... Did I perceive that incorrectly, that was turning him on to some degree?
I didn't notice that the sawing gesture, the hacking gesture, was what turned him on. I thought it was when she was sassing him.
I thought it was the moment that she started sawing. That's when he's like, "Man, I could really see myself with this girl." That's what I perceived, but maybe
the moment the saw hit bone.
Yeah,
was like, this is true love.
That's right. Yep, that's right. That's what I thought it was. So, did you get some topical parallelism with, oh, you're going to invade this place? What's going to happen after you take over, though? I don't know. I have no plan. Was that the only one that thought? Did you see a parallel there as well?
Well, now I do, that you pointed out in a very heavy-handed way, David Chen.
Good. I mean, so what do you make of this scene with this nurse? Again, assuming that we don't know whether we'll see her again.
I am not commenting on that. But I did think that – I think what they were trying to do was show that Robb would be a good king, because he's a compassionate king. Even if he's a young, foolish king, he's a very compassionate king. And, you know, will hold your hand when an attractive nurse hacks your leg off.
Right.
But I don't know. What did you think? of it, David. I, it sounds like you didn't think much of it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, it was kind of like, well, he didn't really have a plan going into this thing, and now he's being forced to admit it, and so we'll see what's going to happen. But I mean, in Game of Thrones, we have seen that warlords and soldiers don't necessarily make good kings. So that being said, yeah, he does seem to have a lot of compassion here. So not just for that guy with the leg, but just in general, right? He doesn't want to kill any prisoners when it would be easy to do so, and probably easier on him to do so. Obviously, the show makes him out to be a good fighter. Whether or not he'd be a good leader in general remains to be seen. I'm very skeptical, but I don't think we really know enough at this point.
Well, I think it's an interesting question that it sets up with all these contenders for the throne. What does make a good king, a good leader?
Right. Of the contenders, I think he'd probably be the best. If you're comparing it to what, Stannis and Renly, I'd probably choose Rob myself, but maybe it's because I have the Sean Bean bias going on.
I think you're forgetting about the amazing leader, King Joffrey.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
What
totally,
a brilliant job he's doing.
Totally forgot
Iron
about
Throne.
That. Well, let's go to King's Landing, right, where I think it opens with Joffrey ordering the brutal beating of his betrothed woman, right?
Oh,
Sansa.
Yes.
What'd you say?
I said, don't forget ripping her dress off.
Yeah, ripping her dress off. Like, so they actually showed that scene in the trailer. And I was like, what is the context for this? You know, like, why is Sansa getting her dress ripped off in front of Joffrey while he's, like, looking on approvingly? And we found out that it's because Joffrey blames Sansa for the attack on Tywin's men, which makes no sense. Something that Sansa points out, but of course Joffrey's bloodlust cannot be sated. And then Tyrion barges in and is like, hey, you know, stop being a dick. And my perception of that is, first of all, every week of Game of Thrones might as well just be called the Tyrion Lannister Power Hour.
Yes.
but aside from that, it strikes me that this cannot sustain itself in the sense that, not from a show perspective, but from a actually plot perspective, that, like, I feel like Joffrey cannot be constantly humiliated without something horrible happening. And in fact, something horrible did kind of happen in this episode.
Oh, just kind of.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit of horror.
Okay, go ahead, Joanna.
I agree with you. I think the show should be called Tyrion Lannister and Puts Assholes in Their Places.
Yes.
and I would watch that show. And that, I know we're talking primarily about the show as a show, but that scene is, like, directly out of the book. And I thought they did it perfectly. And then when they moved into that other scene at King's Landing, can we talk about that yet?
Well, yeah, just a quick note that when Tyrion is like, hey, you know, are you going to be okay? Are you still okay with Joffrey? And she's like, yes, I still love him. You know, like a robot. Chilling and effective, but also you kind of got to admire her because she knows what's up. You know, like,
and Tyrion does. He's like, you might make this out of this alive yet.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
you know how to play the game. All right.
Yeah, but so how far she has come. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, and we've seen this in previous weeks, but it is very clear this week. Like, in previous weeks, she's just, like, pretending, you know, to be nice or whatever. And this week, she's, like, getting beaten and humiliated in front of all the townspeople, and she still has to do the same thing. So she continues to grow in her endurance on a weekly basis. So then, you know, Tyrion's like, okay, look, Joffrey obviously needs to kind of get his pipes cleaned, if you know what I'm saying, right? Like, that's obviously the solution. So
to everyone's problem in life.
Correct. I wholeheartedly endorse this. And so he does what a normal loving uncle would do. He hires prostitutes for Joffrey. So this is kind of nice, you know. My uncle never hired me prostitutes.
That means he didn't really love you.
I think,
Dave,
that's the case.
Not,
yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
It was a very nice gesture. And
here's my promise to you. If I ever see that you're being a sadistic bastard on this podcast, I promise to select you two of the finest prostitutes.
Well, that's very kind of you, Joanna.
All of Westeros
so,
for your disposal.
So, all right. So he hires these prostitutes, and Joffrey doesn't use them in precisely the way that Tyrion intended, I think.
I think.
And so here is my question to you, and I don't think it's a spoiler to ask this question, which is Joffrey, does Joffrey torment the prostitutes because he just really gets off on it, or because he wants to send Tyrion a message, or more likely, both?
Well, here's the thing. This is the scene I had the biggest problem with, because I think we can all agree that we already really hated Joffrey. And we got it that he was evil, and we got it from that scene where he was beating up Sansa and having her stripped in the middle of the court. So I didn't see the necessity of this scene other than to have, two naked ladies again and even more depravity heaped on to this already depraved world. But someone who writes for my site, Pajiba, pointed out that Joffrey's older in the show than he is in the book, and that it was important – that the scene was important because it showed that Joffrey is not just like a spoiled child. He is a really through and through evil little fucker.
Right. And a psychopath too, I think.
Yeah. And – I mean, I don't know. I feel like I got that already. But if the rest of America feels like they need to see a woman, well, she didn't get beat really on screen, but,
Well, that's the thing with this episode that I thought was kind of well done, is that despite how horrifying it was, there was actually very little on-screen violence, right? There's a lot of screaming and off-screen implied violence, but you see very little of it.
Seeing that instrument.
Well, hold on. Actually, okay, I'll get to that in a second. But before I get to that, let me just say, so Joffrey, the actor, I believe, who plays him is 19 years old. And that's older than he is in the book. Now, is this scene a scene from the book? Or?
No.
Okay. So they some writer at the Game of Thrones HBO office cooked this up on his own.
Right.
Okay, that's kind of...
That's what's weird about it,
Yeah.
I feel like they were like, I think they're not really getting it that Joffrey's a dickhead.
Hey,
let's bring in Roz, our favorite naked lady, to make a point, and we'll beat some girl from the last episode who had it bad enough having to have sex with the old Maester Pycelle. I was not a fan of that scene.
Hey, by the way, did we talk last week about the feedback regarding making Khal Drogo into a rapist? Did we talk about that in last week's episode?
I don't think so.
Okay, so let's just mention that real quick then. Is like two episodes ago, we mentioned how in the book, Khal Drogo is less rapey than he is in the series, right?
Yes.
And why is that? Like, why would they have done that? That serves no purpose. And people actually wrote in with some pretty good feedback about what purpose that served, which is that if you make Khal Drogo more rapey in the series, that it allows Daenerys to have kind of a better character arc, that she goes from kind of victimized woman into empowered woman.
But I don't feel like you need it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You don't need her to be raped on her wedding night to show that. Like, it's enough to show her being sexually pimped out by her brother
at the
beginning of last season, which they did, So you got the picture that Dany was this very ill-treated, very tender flower of a woman, and then she becomes this badass leader, And I feel like rape was not necessary for her journey.
Cord writes in, who is a listener, and please, if you write in, please let us know where you're from. That the rape, adding rape, does a couple of things for the audience. One, it makes the Dothraki seem a much more brutal people. It makes sense he would rape her in the context of the Dothraki raping and pillaging villages. Two, it makes the arc of Khal Drogo that much more dramatic, from being a rapist to being a caring lover and protector of Daenerys, which is much more interesting. And three, it empowers Daenerys. So
I'm just not really comfortable with the idea that rape empowers Daenerys. Rape, and then her turning that into wanting so much to sexually please her husband,
I agree.
That makes me very uncomfortable.
As well it should. So, but that being said, that there are some I just wanted to mention there are some plausible explanations out there for why they added that rape. Now, as for why they added this horrible scene of sexual assault, let me just say this, Joanna. I thought they actually didn't go as far as they could have, because was I the only person that thought something much more horrible was going to happen when he held up that instrument with a spiky point at the end?
You were not.
Yeah. I got an American Psycho vibe. Like, not the movie American Psycho, but the Bret Easton Ellis book, which has probably the most graphic and brutal versions of sexual assault that you'll ever find anywhere. Yeah. And so I got a vibe like, oh my gosh, this is going to turn into American Psycho, the book. And
there were like antlers on that thing.
Yeah. Like, and
that was, yeah.
And I don't know if they had intended that it would be that from the beginning, but then they decided not to go that way. But thank goodness they didn't go that way. Like, I don't know. I'm just grateful that they didn't go that way. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm just grateful.
You know what? And you know what's interesting is that a woman was a head writer on this episode. I noticed that in the credits. Like, I don't pay attention every single week as to who the head writer was, but it was a woman this week. And I don't know. For all my, nattering on about sex position and how it's not necessary, I thought this was really unnecessary.
Well, yeah. So it's interesting how this show kind of plays with what you see and what you don't see. Do you know what I mean? Like, and just, he holds up this thing with the antlers, and I'm just like, my mind is going the worst possible place. And then you see Roz beat her on the side with it, and I'm like, I let out a sigh of relief. You know what I mean?
Oh, thank God, it's just a brutal beating.
Yeah, no, that's right. That is right. That is right. It sounds horrible to say, but it's true, because it could have been so much worse, right? It could have been so much worse, and we'll just leave it at that. But yeah, how necessary was the scene? How necessary was the antlers? I'm not sure, but I think at this point, if you were on Team Joffrey before this episode, I'm hoping that you're a convert afterwards.
If you're on Team Joffrey before, I'm very concerned.
All right. Your
moral compass.
So then we find out what happens with Arya. She is taken to Harrenhal, and she is forced to watch her compatriots brutally tortured and killed by the Lannister's men. And what did you think of this sequence of just this entire horrible sequence?
Speaking of book horrors or whatever, the person I was watching with started screaming about 1984. She's like, why are they putting the rat in the bucket? What are they going to do with the bucket? I thought it was like...
Is that also from the book, or is that ingenuity on the show creator's part?
I can't remember if they actually did the rat in the bucket thing. I mean, there's definitely horrible torture and the sadistic way that they chose and stuff like that and having them in cages. But I don't remember the rat in the bucket thing, and I feel like I would have. But please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong about that. It was pretty disgusting. I thought it was great, though. That's an area of gruesome that, it served the plot. It showed in the danger that Arya and all of her friends were in. So... And Harrenhal, Harrenhal in the book is, they keep talking about how it's haunted. And it's supposed to be this, like, derelict, really scary, but huge, awesome castle. And I thought they, we didn't see too much of it.
We saw, like, an establishing shot, basically.
Yeah. What we saw was pretty creepy and awesome. So I was really excited about that. I thought they did a good job.
Well, they also did a good job. I mean, again, elements of the show, parallel / mirror elements of our world or our history.
And are you calling Harrenhal Abu Ghraib? Is that what you're about to say?
No, I wasn't actually. I was going to say it just reminds me of – well, actually, now that you bring it up, you could make that comparison. But it kind of, I think, harkens back to like medieval torture, right? And why torture in general as a way of finding out information is so horrible, right? Because, this is what would happen to people in the medieval ages or, Spanish Inquisition or whatever. They'd be tortured and then, whether or not you provide the right information, you're just killed. And you get a real sense of how your fate is determined by just random whims of people, like Arya could have just easily been chosen and she'd be dead, and so all that stuff is done really effectively, that life is brutal. And then she's like kind of lying at night awake, reciting the names of, it sounded like, people who wronged her, right? Or people that she has to kill in the future, she's planning on killing, right? Poor Arya, man, she's not in a good situation. But we find out that she's going to be the cupbearer, so that should be good. Of course, again, after another kind of really tense scene where you're waiting for her to grab the sword out of that guy's thing and just kill Tywin right there. One of these days is going to have to happen, Joanna. Something is going to have to happen with these close-up of swords, or else I am going to break. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I feel your pain. Somebody, are you in need of a prostitute or two to relieve the tension?
Somebody commented or reviewed us on iTunes saying that I went over the line in referring to the Arya storyline as a cock tease. Let me just say, I was referring to the Arya storyline and not Arya herself. Okay.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. So yeah. But speaking of which, if you like this show, if you like this podcast of Cast of Kings, please feel free to leave us a review on iTunes, as long as it makes sense and is positive. Unlike the review I just mentioned.
I want to say this about the Harrenhal sequence is, I don't know about you, but I was so excited to see Tywin Lannister. We had to wait so long last season for Charles Dance to show up, and I was so excited. You know, he had a dramatic entrance again. Not quite as dramatic as last year, but a dramatic entrance again, and I just love him. I think he does a great job.
Yeah,
I was really
he's pretty
excited
awesome.
To see him.
Yeah. So we'll see if what's going to happen with Arya becoming cupbearer, and whether we're going to get a ton more random close-ups on swords, hoping that Arya's going to grab it and then shove it through Tywin's neck.
Well, you saw that it was her sword, right? He took Needle. So it's her sword that she kept looking at, you know, that John gave her.
Yes, no, I get that. I get that. Okay. That doesn't change the fact that...
I just wanted you to know that it's an important sword. It's not just... They're not just zooming in on any sword. It's the sword.
Sure. Okay. It's still... That makes it even more frustrating that it's her sword, because then it would have some poetic justice to it, you know? But whatever. Okay. You know, continue to tempt us with actually... paying off on Arya's Serio Forel training, whatever, you know, whatever. I don't care. And finally, Daenerys, there's some hope for Daenerys, right? She ventures to Qarth, where...
Nice pronunciation.
Even though I did a better job than Daenerys at pronouncing it.
Yeah.
And exactly. She encounters a merchant. I just love this sequence between the two of them where they have this dialogue. Here's a clip from it.
My friend... We have traveled very far. We have no food, no water. Once I see my people fed, I would be honored.
Forgive me, Mother of Dragons, but no man alive has seen a living dragon. Some of my more skeptical friends refuse to believe your children even exist. All we ask is the chance to see for ourselves.
I am not a liar.
Oh, I don't think you are. But as I've never met you before, my opinion on the matter is of limited value.
Where I come from, guests are treated with respect, not insulted at the gates.
Then perhaps you should return to where you come from. We wish you well.
And then they have this like wonderful dialogue where it's like kind of a verbal chess game where she's like, she doesn't want to show the dragons, he needs to see them. And then all of a sudden... this big black guy named Zorro steps in and is like, hey, I will take control of this situation and let them in, right? Is that essentially what happens?
Yes.
Yeah. And here's the thing with this show that I kind of, it seems to be a theme, is that random people stepping in and saving people for reasons that are out of the comprehension of the viewer. And I guess... like, I'm not sure what Zorro sees in it for himself. I guess it's alluded to that he was similarly an outcast and was accepted into Qarth and now has become one of the 13, right? And that might be why he let them in. It also recalls the scene from last season where Tyrion was saved by Bronn randomly. And I guess Bronn saw a financial... status sort of motivation for himself, but it wasn't clear at the moment that it happened. You know what I'm saying? That was the case. And I think that's true here as well. It's like it's you get some sense of it, but it's not 100% clear why this is happening. But what did you think of this sequence, Joanna?
I liked it. I thought it was great. There was some great dialogue. It was nice to see Danny finally doing something.
As opposed to just like thirsting to death in the desert, you mean?
Right. It's weird though because and not to like, you know, ring an old bell, but in the book, she will show her dragons to whoever wants to see them. And I don't know. I mean, it did provide some nice dramatic tension. I don't know if maybe they didn't have the CGI budget right. to show the dragons in every episode. And she's like, oh, they're in that cage. Can't you tell?
So my interpretation of that was that she didn't want to show them because the dragons were too small. Like, that they would not be impressive. But that doesn't really make much sense because they would still be impressive because they're dragons. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
I'd be like, here are my dragons. We're starving and dying of thirst. Let us into your tropical oasis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I got three dragons. I will show them all to you.
So I guess the lack of CGI budget is supposed to make us think, oh, okay. So Daenerys is just too proud, right? She's too proud to...
Or like you said, she's playing a chess game and she feels like she needs to hold on. This is her trump card. Right. And what guarantee does she have that they won't just take her dragons and leave? Or
exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
But they just take the cage anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Well, that would be rude, Joanna. That would be rude. So
I'm sure in
So she knows they're not going to do that, obviously.
Clearly. And then, yeah, and then in the, at least in the book, Zorro, you know, he's just this very flowery guy and he just thinks she and her dragons are great. And
oh, because in this scene in the equivalent of the book.
This scene in the equivalent of the book.
I see. Gotcha.
Which is cool. I liked this scene. Trying to get into the gates of Karth, I thought was a good scene. But they've already seen the dragons before she even gets there, and it's this whole thing. And then she just parades around with the dragons. But that's kind of boring. It's cool that she's got to negotiate her way into the city. So
gotcha. Know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought it was really effective. I really enjoyed this scene, actually. So
yeah.
I liked it a lot. We also had some action going on at Renly's camp. So Littlefinger shows up. And if you didn't think Littlefinger was already enough of a bastard... He continues to prove himself as having new potential for bastardity.
The Lannisters will trade your daughters for the Kingslayer.
Of course they will. Jaime Lannister for two girls. Robb will never agree to those terms.
I'm not bringing these terms to him. I'm bringing them to you.
You think I keep secrets from my son?
Robb has surprised them all with his skills in battle, but he's not a mother. Consider it, Kat. May not get another chance. I've brought you a gift.
I don't want your gifts.
A token of Tyrion Lannister's goodwill. He wants you to understand that this exchange of prisoners is offered in good faith.
Good faith.
So, Littlefinger lies to Catelyn Stark, and says that they have Arya. Not sure exactly what type of game he's playing here, because they clearly don't have Arya.
It's the Game of Thrones, Dave.
Oh, you're right. My bad. So, you know, she already hates him because he basically precipitated the death of her husband. How much, like, if he's trying to win her affection, he's going about it in a really bizarre way that I can't possibly understand, is what I'm saying. You know
yeah,
I mean?
And I don't really get what they're doing with Littlefinger here because, you know, he did a similar thing with Cersei earlier in the season where he was just sort of very impolitic with her. And I felt like last season he was such a great manipulator. And this season he's just kind of bumbling. He bumbles with Margaery too earlier in the – when they're walking through the camp and he's trying to crack jokes about Renly being gay. It's like, really? Do you think that that's the smart political
yeah,
move?
Yeah, is that – well, I mean – yeah, well, what's the end game there? You know, what is he trying to do? Because the idea of Renly and Loras being together is already an open secret, right? Like, people are joking about it in the first scene. So it's not like he's trying to gain leverage over her because everyone already knows. So what is going on exactly?
I didn't know if he was trying to bed her for some political advantage or, you know, hey, if you're not getting it from Renly, I'm available or whatever that was.
Right.
But – and I thought the scene with Catelyn would have been so much better if he had found a way to, you know, convince her that he did everything he could for her husband, you know, like somehow win her back over. Wouldn't that have been a cooler scene to watch him like fuck with her rather than just blunder through the whole scene?
Forget about how clumsily he did that scene. It's more about the fundamental lie that he told that they have Arya. Like, what is going to happen when she's like, okay, let's make this trade, and then they don't have Arya? Like, what does he hope is going to happen there? You know,
that they'll find Arya. They're out looking for her.
I guess that's a pretty big.
That's not just his lie. Like, that's the lie that the Lannisters, right, you know, right, they've been hoping that everyone believes that they have Arya squirreled somewhere away,
right.
in the castle. Right. So, right. Yeah.
Fair enough. That makes sense. as much as it can.
And then, I mean, as gruesome as the TV show has been, I was cringing because I was really worried we were going to see some sort of like moldering head of Sean Bean in the box.
Yeah, so we're meant to assume that it's his remains
I think it's just his bones.
I was actually wondering what is physically in that box. Like,
yeah,
because it hasn't been long enough for there to just be bones, right? So, and I don't think they've invented cremation in the show yet. So, what is in right. there? What is in there? What is, like, I just wanted to see what Caitlin sees.
They describe it in great detail in the book, where they talk about like how his eyes are gone. I was just really afraid they're going to show what they talked about in the book.
Right, I'm glad
and
they did.
I'm pretty sure his head is still on a pike in King's Landing in this version. But right. Yeah, it was our Seven moment where we're like, what's in the box? What's in there?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I thought Michelle Farrelly, who plays Catelyn Stark, did a pretty phenomenal job with the acting in this scene, just conveying everything she needs to convey with Littlefinger being there and her not wanting to see, like her not wanting Littlefinger to see her emotion and all the, and being really torn about it. It was just phenomenal work by Michelle Farrelly. So,
speaking of acting, what do you think of, it's slipping my mind at the moment, but the actress who's playing Marjorie Tyrell from The Tudors, that actress.
She's all right. I mean, I like her a lot. Feels weird to say that because she spent most of her time in the show being naked, but
right.
Yeah, I thought she did a solid job. We talked a little bit more about her last week and how she's trying to be like she's a strong female character in the show, like taking control and doing what needs to be done. Why? Do you have reservations?
I just I never really got into The Tudors, but I heard a lot of complaints about her range in that show, and I know we haven't seen that much of her, so it's early to judge. But
or have we?
She has like this annoying simpering smirk that I'm not really a huge fan
That's fair enough, but I think I just don't think we've seen enough to really make a good judgment, so
that's fair.
Yeah. And let's see what else goes on in this episode. So then Renly and Stannis have their confrontation, and Renly's like, look, I got like 5,000 more guys than you, and Stannis is like, well, I have magic. And right. So who knows which one of them is actually right. Stannis has this confrontation with, this is the one name I don't know from this episode. The guy who he talks with on the boat at the end of the episode.
Sir Davos.
Mm-hmm. So they have that conversation, and I didn't really get what was going on in that conversation, to be honest. Like, I just didn't understand. I understood he wanted Davos to smuggle Melisandre, right, somewhere?
Right.
That's the only thing I got. Was there anything else I was supposed to understand at this point in the story?
So, I mean, I don't know if you remember from Sir Davos's earlier scene, but like, he is very loyal to Stannis. Stannis took his fingers off. He was a smuggler. Stannis took his fingers off, but then he let him become, you know, a knight and, you know, earn his way and that sort of stuff. It's like he was punished for his crime, but then he was allowed to sort of grow and prosper from there. And I think Davos has a huge problem with the Red Witch, with Melisandre.
Right.
And
there was that whole conversation that they had in the last episode, Davos and his son, about like the new religion and how he doesn't get it.
Yeah. And so trying to come to grips with his loyalty for Stannis while Stannis is sort of under the thrall of this woman. Does that make sense? So I think that's kind of what they were talking about, is like Stannis is like, this needs to be done. And Davos is like, really? Does it really need to be done?
Really? Yeah. Does it really need
really?
To be done?
Really? We're going to do it this way? We're going to play dirty? Really? Okay. So.
All right. So then Davos brings Melisandre into a cave, and
Like you do.
As you do when you're about to give birth. And then she's like, oh, I know you want to see what's under these robes. I'm going to show you. But not in the way that Davos would probably prefer. In the sense that her belly is completely distended and she gives birth to a smoke monster. So what'd you say?
Sorry, it was very Lost, but you didn't watch Lost, so
I didn't watch Lost, but here's my thing is I guess like the gestation period for smoke monsters is like greatly accelerated because it feels like only 2 weeks ago that Stannis was impregnating Melisandre. Unless we're to assume that he is not the father of that child.
Of that smoke baby?
Yeah, the smoke baby. you don't have to comment on this. I'm just putting out my own crackpot theories here.
I'm not going to comment on it, but I am going to say, did you have like an extremely what the fuck moment when smoke came out of this woman at the end of the episode?
Yeah, I mean, usually when a sort of long-limbed black thing crawls, out of a woman who's like screaming naked on the floor, it does raise my raise my eyebrow a little bit. Like I'm what's going on there? You know, I do ask that question.
Like, what's all this?
Yeah,
what's this?
What's all this
hubbub?
What's all this then? That's what I asked. But yeah, I thought it was the perfect capper for an episode that was full of pretty horrifying sights. So, well done, creators of Game of Thrones. Well done.
Where was that line you drew earlier when it came to, I don't know, there was some sort of, wolf dreams. You were drawing the line at wolf dreams because you felt like that was too much hocus pocus-ness for this universe, is that right?
Yeah. So we'll see if this actually breaks.
What about Smoke Baby?
We'll see if this breaks the show. We'll see if it breaks the show. At this point, though, I think it's pretty clear that Melisandre actually has some kind of powers. Is what I think we are to conclude from this. I don't think you can fake
a smoke baby crawled out of her.
I don't think you can fake that. Is what I'm proposing. Is I don't think it's fakeable. So in terms of the overall episode, we have here a collection of really excellent scenes, Joanna. But one of my concerns about this season is you're introducing so many new characters and so many new elements. Compared to last season, I felt like, and I know this isn't true, but I felt like last season, with every single episode, we basically got a glimpse of all the characters of the show. That's what it felt like to me. And that might, again, that's probably not true. But this episode, it really starts to feel like the show is buckling under the weight of what it's trying to do. You know, there's no Jon Snow, there's no Bran in this episode. And I'm trying to think of
You miss Bran and his boring wolf dreams?
Yeah, dude, man. I really want to see where that's going. So, but in all seriousness, Joanna, I feel like if they're introducing Bran and wolf dreams, that they're going to try to pay that off somehow. And so, you know, there being nothing from this episode about that, I'm just like, well, why were we shown this in the first place? You know, I'm sure they're going to get back to it, but it's just like they're trying to do so much, and I don't know if they're going to succeed. And then it raises the question of how do you even evaluate this show? Because it's really just a series of short stories, right? You get a glimpse of this character, glimpse of this character, but in terms of like an entire episode, I feel like, I don't know, that the through line was easier to grasp last season than it is in this season, and especially with an episode like this.
Well, I think it's possible that last season there was a bit more movement in terms of characters from different, if you want to say short stories, sort of interacting with each other.
Yeah.
And here we've had like Catelyn go from Rob's camp over to Renly's camp. And Littlefinger, you know, went and visited and that sort of stuff. But mostly you're right that they're keeping to their own sort of separate corners of the map. And they're quite spread out over the map. We keep getting new locations. I'm sure you missed Theon and his sister, and you're wondering what's going on
with
them. Oh,
yeah, that's the other thing. That's the other thing, yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. And the same complaint, I think, has been lodged about the books as well. like I've mentioned before, you go whole books without certain characters, some of your favorite characters. And it's just George R.R. Martin has taken on a lot. And I think the writers of the show are doing an amazing job sort of condensing certain plot lines and making them really cleaner than they were in the books. And I think so much – I hear you, but I think there's so much that happens that's fantastic in every episode that the bumpiness is at least worth the ride.
I agree. I agree. I have no issue with the show at all. Like, I still love the show, and obviously we're going to continue watching it. I just wonder, like, is the show going to buckle under all the weight of its scope?
Well, you know what the solution is, right?
What is the solution?
You got to start killing some characters.
Very interesting. Yeah. And I think we all assume that that would happen at some point. One other thing I forgot to mention, which is Tyrion finally figures out a way to get a spy into Cersei's inner sanctum.
Nothing to say? No more warnings for me, sir?
You will withdraw these filthy accusations.
Have you ever given any thought to what King Joffrey will have to say when he finds out you've been bedding his mother?
It's not my fault.
Did she take you against your will? Can you not defend yourself, knight?
Your own father, Lord Tywin, when I was named the king's squire, he told me to obey her in everything.
Did he tell you to fuck her, too?
I only meant I did as I was bid.
Hated every moment of it. Is that what you'll have me believe? A high place in court, knighthood, my sister's legs spreading open for you at night. Oh, yes, it must have been terrible.
I thought that was hilarious. Again, Tyrion always gets the best dialogue. But yeah, man, Cersei really has a thing for people that are related to her. She's really trying to preserve that bloodline, huh?
I think what comes through better in the books than in the show is how much she actually loves her brother, as gross as that sounds.
Oh, no, no. I think we get a good sense that she does love him in this show. The cousin thing, like, you got a glimpse of that in season one, but that's never really explained, like, why she's sleeping with this dude.
Well, in...
Although there was this... he was the king's squire, right? So there was, like, the implication that maybe she set it up so that, I don't know, the king was drugged by this guy, right? Like, that was the possibility that this happened.
Right, yeah, that he put some very strong wine in Robert's wineskin. Right. But what they make clear in the book, I think, and I think central casting sort of failed on this front, is that her cousin, Lyssa Lannister, looks kind of like a shitty copy of Jaime Lannister.
I see.
And so she's having sex with him because it's the closest she can get to having sex with her brother. Isn't that heartwarming?
It is heartwarming.
It's really
yeah.
sweet. Really? So, yeah. You know. But they cast, unfortunately, they cast a kid who did not look much like the actor who plays Jaime Lannister.
Right. They cast a guy who looked more like Loras than Jaime Lannister, in my opinion.
Right.
And led to me getting confused about the two of them. So, and on that note, we wrap things up. I enjoyed this episode, but man, like that, you see things, at least in your mind's eye, that are really hard to unsee. And... Yeah, man. I hope they. When are things going to be happy in this show? You know, when is someone going to get some satisfaction other than Tyrion? Right. That's kind of what I'm hoping is going to happen sometime soon. I really hope.
I hope that the smoke baby is able to deliver that to you, Dave.
I hope so. I'm really hanging my hopes on that smoke baby. All right, Joanna Robinson. Where can people find more of your work on the internet?
Every day on Pajiba.com, or you can follow me over on Twitter at QuitYourJRob.
Find me at Twitter.com/DaveChensky. That's Dave Chen, S-K-Y, DaveChen.net. And find one of my other podcasts at TobolowskiFiles.com, the storytelling show I do with Stephen Tobolowsky. All right, guys, thank you for listening to this week's episode of A Cast of Kings. We'll see you guys next week.